This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. Welcome to the Top Chef Judges Roundtable podcast here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. I am one of your two hosts tonight. If you're not used to a male voice kicking this off that is lacking a Canadian accent, that is because our good friend Haley is taking the week off this week, but we have two of our three OGs here, myself and my good friend LaTanya. LaTanya Starks, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm so happy to be back. Hey, everybody. I missed you. Did you miss me?
Do you have your aluminium hat on like Buddha to
help
protect against, I don't know what we need protection against.
Aliens.
Internet trolls, aliens.
Yeah, both internet trolls and aliens. I always have my aluminium hat.
Yes.
I don't know if that's just a me thing, but yeah, I always have one of those just to be sure.
I just love the pronunciation of aluminum.
It's so much better aluminium than aluminum.
Yeah.
You know, every time I realize that the Brits say aluminium, or I guess in this case, Australians too, I'm just bowled over.
Aluminium laboratory.
Yes.
It's like putting the accent on a different syllable. Mm-hmm. It's always fun.
Yep. Put the emphasis on a different syllable.
So we are down to our top six this week. And it just struck me as we kicked off the show that we've got a top six BIPOC crew rocking here.
I was going to say, everybody in the top six is a person of color. And I wrote this down. So I just want us to kind of think about that for a moment and then think back to season one and then to think if at that time you ever for a second thought that it was possible for this show to have a final six that was all people of color. And this is why I call BS on any show that doesn't embrace diversity and inclusion in casting, because honestly, there's no excuse in any industry. There's just no excuse. Like it's a simple fix.
And I think even looking at the top six, you know, there's tremendous diversity within the top six. And I'm not even just talking from a cultural perspective, but from like a cooking styles, from what they bring literally to the table. It's just, if there was a fear of sameness by embracing diversity, I think like Top Chef has, you know, shattered any notions on that.
Yeah, Top Chef is definitely, in my mind, the number one show for having been able to, number one reality show in terms of having been able to overcome an initial, well, this is an industry that is full of just like white males. It's like an industry that rewards privilege in a lot of ways. But, you know, we can make a change just by merely saying that we're going to and like committing to casting efforts. It's just, I think that any show who is still having that problem should look to Top Chef for how to solve it.
Right. And it's not something, it's something they kind of quietly did. They just did it. They didn't
trumpet
it. Or like, and maybe it's like, maybe they you know, we look at Survivor and Big Brother as, you know, specifically calling it out as an initiatives that have, you know, been, you know, launched to quote unquote help those shows. I've not heard. I'm sure there have been rumblings over the years in terms of recently in terms of Top Chef's diversity casting, but it doesn't seem like it's been the same quote unquote problem that it has on more than mainstream network TV. I don't know if I don't believe Top Chef has come under fire recently. Maybe that's why they've not had to make a big deal about it, but it's a big deal.
No, it's a really big deal. Yeah. And it lends something to the meals that we're able to see these judges have, because these chefs are just innately bringing in a sense of their home and themselves to all the dishes that they're making now. And I think that has to elevate, just automatically elevate the food that we're having. And I have some specific things to say about how diversity is a cuisine elevation. But yeah, it's just exciting to see this on a show that's that mainstream, and to know that it's something that can be done.
And even though we lost Jay this week, and you know, we'll get to Last Chance Kitchen and, you know, the return of the winner from there. Mm-hmm. But even looking at Jay, you can't look at any of these six chefs and then just be also assumptive about what kind of food they're bringing to the table. Jay's even though she has recently brought a lot of Korean influence to the table, she said, you know, I'm all about seafood, I'm all about New Orleans. That's where her heart is from a cooking perspective, and how do you blend those together? So it's I don't know. It's just there. If there was any fear of there being a sameness out of a BIPOC top six, is not something you can say easily quickly, but there's the food we saw today and even in previous weeks is just run the range. So that's really exciting.
There's no easy way to say that. Almost like we should have a different acronym. but you know, we'll take it for now, because it's all we got.
Do you want to talk about the quickfire?
Of course. The quickfire was so cute.
I thought it was. Adorable. Although I had to look up what technically makes a fajita. Uh-huh. Was there a lot? I was wondering, what were the technical parameters of the food?
Yeah.
And all I found online was that it's typically strips of a protein. Obviously, it was originally a skirt steak. Mm-hmm. But usually strips of protein, often with green peppers and onions, all grilled. And then you throw toppings on it. It was really kind of broad in its potential interpretation.
Yeah.
I think this was more about showcasing the farmer's market potentially.
Yeah, that farmer's market is, you know, Chicago has some things like that, but they're not usually open air until it's the weather's turn to like us.
Which we never know when that's going to actually happen.
Exactly. We can plan for something.
Have you been to any of the farmer's markets in Chicago?
There was one in Evanston that I went to, which doesn't technically count. Evanston is not a part of Chicago, but
Chicagoland.
Yeah. When I was growing up, we would always go, this is one of the reasons I love Nick so much, because it really is getting to relive a lot of my childhood through Nick and DeMar's dishes. Nick being from Mississippi, my grandmother being from Mississippi, and having very similar cooking styles. So, you know, we would always do things because my grandmother grew up on a farm. So we would go to the farm and pick our own produce every year. And it was awesome. It was just a lot of fun to do when you're young. We would go to farmers markets because my grandmother knew that's where all of the produce with taste was. So I grew up doing all that stuff and then kind of fell off as I got older, unfortunately. But it's definitely something that gives me warm memories of my grandmother's cooking, which in my opinion is the best cooking I've ever tasted.
Yeah, I think my only experience in Chicago for the farmers markets is, and it's killing me that I can't remember the street I most recently lived on in Chicago. But it was in East Lakeview at the Nettlehorst School during the summer months. So Broadway, like one block north of Belmont. And so like in the kind of parking area slash playground of the school every Saturday. Once, you know, again, once the weather gets nice.
Right.
They would have, it wasn't huge by any means. There was like this cheese company that was always regularly there. And you'd have like, you know, four or five places that had different fruits and vegetables. And then occasionally you'd have some sort of, you know, jam.
Yes. But it was always exciting when there was jam.
Yeah. But when I lived just outside of LA, there was like a huge farmer's market in Calabasas and another one in Thousand Oaks that were like all both within like 15 to 30 minutes of me. It's where I discovered the persimmon. I got my first persimmon from a farmer's market. So I don't know if there's many in Grand Rapids. I mean, there's a downtown market, but it's really more of an indoor like food hall. It's not something that, like people bring in their wares and it's just like open and you can get food. But yeah, it's not like stalls and like a bunch of local, you know, farmers or produce providers gathering on weekends, more permanent installation. So, but I've also not looked too hard. So I think maybe now that the weather's starting to get nicer here, I'll have
to explore. Yeah, it's I need to be on the lookout too, because I can only imagine that the farmers markets in this general area would be great because everyone is so bougie here that they would require it. But yeah, I definitely need to figure out where my local farmers markets are, because I love fruits and vegetables probably more than I love meat at this point. Probably. Yeah. Probably because I'm looking forward to when I can eat fruits and vegetables again. But that, you know, that longing is still there. And this place looked like an amazing place to go and just kind of get lost. I mean, we saw a couple of the chefs get lost, unfortunately, and how much there was to offer.
Yeah, I think that was an interesting thing about this challenge is it was equal parts. They had 45 minutes, but they had to also figure out how do you balance that between the shopping and the cooking. And it seemed like Ashley was like one of those folks who, like 15 minutes in, she still is like looking around, figuring out what she wants, wondering if everybody has finished the, has started their cooking already. And then we had Claudette Zepeda.
I know.
I was like, wait a minute, is that Claudette? And she gets introduced because like before the words Claudette, you know, emerged from Padma's mouth, she's like, she said, just, you know, she was a Top Chef US, she was in Top Chef Mexico. And that's definitely Claudette. It's like, I almost didn't recognize her, but for somebody who has goldfish brain like I do and can't remember half the contestants from the last couple seasons, I was just very impressed with myself that I recognized Claudette.
I did not recognize Claudette. my goldfish brain continued. That's hard to say too. But yeah, I was excited when I found out that she was there. But I didn't recognize her
first. I remember I believe she was Haley's draft pick the year that we had it. I believe that Haley was all about and loving Claudette. So we'll have to, once we get Haley back, get her, pick her brain on what she thinks about the return of Claudette in this episode. And also we'll fast forward a little bit, the return of Shota in Last Chance Kitchen.
But, yes.
we'll get back to that.
But about that.
They had to create their own version of fajitas using ingredients from the Houston Farmers Market. It seemed to be, at least from the way that Evelyn had described it, it seemed to lean a little bit more into ingredients you'd typically use in, you know, Mexican or Tex-Mex cuisine. I was proud of myself. Padma asked, you know, like what food, what Tex-Mex food was created? And all the chefs were stumped.
They had no idea.
I was like, is it fajitas? And boom. You know,
congratulations on getting some trivia right.
Yeah, hey, you know what? I was quiz bowl kid back in my high school days, so I was to pull that up. But I can't cook even a quarter as well as any of these people. But throw some food trivia at me, and I do okay. So we had Jay. She made gochujang and tomillo crepes with stir fried tofu, peppers, onions, and pineapple salsa. So this had the peppers, the onions, those things I knew were kind of crucial, not necessarily right. necessary, but key parts of a traditional fajita. But she did not end up getting the crepe to Claudette.
No, she didn't get it on the plate.
She was poor in time management.
Yeah, so Jay and Ashley were the two who were kind of lost in it, just like exploring their feelings while in a market, you know, which, you know, who hasn't done that? I will say that this quick fire for me would probably be the one where I would most have to run and hide for a while after eating the food, because like all of the peppers and the onions and everything, and now there's pineapple salsa happening, my stomach would just explode. It would just not be very happy. This sounds great, though. It just sounds like a GI appointment waiting to happen for me.
Yeah, like, you know, fast forward to the, I mean, thinking back to when Haley and I podcasted about the Great British Bake Off, and even looking at the Elimination Challenge, there's definitely an art to being a judge or guest diner mm-hmm. on one of these cooking or baking shows, and knowing how to strategically approach eating the food.
Right. Yeah,
we saw one of the hosts of Bake Off, of Matt, in his first year, he was like eating everything, and just it did not sit well with him.
It just didn't go well.
I was afraid for some of these astronauts at the Elimination Challenge, just like licking the bowl clean. I'm like, you got five more plates to like pace yourself, buddy.
I can't wait to talk about the guy astronaut. We get to that challenge. That guy is hilarious.
Yeah, Jay ended up being on the bottom. It was, I think both fueled by the fact that she was missing a crepe, but it also seemed like it was just not a great dish. Even, you know, it wasn't like we got if only that crepe had been there, this would have been in the top.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to say that you have the best tofu.
Full stop.
You know. Tofu fajita. You know, I've been eating a lot of tofu recently, so it's something that I'm getting to like more and more, but it is only versatile in that it takes the flavor of what you're cooking it with. So it's just going to taste like the most overwhelming thing in your dish, which I can imagine for a fajita challenge would not be what you want. You want something to, you know, change up the flavors or to complement flavors. So.
And for those of you who are new to watching Top Chef, maybe recommend Top Chef Portland, where they had a dedicated tofu challenge.
Yeah, they did.
A bit more about the different kinds of tofu. Next up, we had Evelyn. Beef fajitas marinated in papalo, lime, and fish sauce with poblano, salsa verde, and rambutan pico. She was in the top half. Mm-hmm. We had three in the top, three in the bottom. Interestingly, we had the same top three and top and bottom three, both in the quick fire and the elimination challenge.
Oh, that's true.
But I had no fear for Evelyn at this.
No, point. I really don't have a lot of fear for Evelyn. She's just joyous and just cooking her heart out and enjoying it. Like she's one of the people in the competition who always genuinely has a smile on her face because she's actually enjoying what's happening.
Yeah,
and the process.
And I'm wondering if there was any sort of advantage to her potentially being a little bit more familiar, maybe more familiar. It's with the farmer's market, just like knowing the layout.
I mean, yeah, having been there before, I'm sure there was. And also, I've never had papalo before, so I'm not sure how it tastes. But they were really kind of surprised that she was able to make it taste good to them.
Yeah, not be overwhelming or like, yeah. She like balanced it out nicely. Damar, first time like in the bottom for Damar.
Honestly,
wasn't it?
Just the beginning of me dreading the whole episode. Like this quickfire was just the beginning of me being like, oh no, what's happening the whole episode?
He had the seared steak with mango relish, purslane salad, and grated chicharron. The idea of grated chicharron on top of it, like seared steak, sounds like gastrointestinal heaven. Followed probably not too shortly by gastrointestinal hell.
Yeah.
But it seemed like that maybe the steak was just a bit too thick here. Like he did not necessarily, he could have cut it up smaller. I think that seemed to be like a main issue.
Yeah, it looked like he had some big beefy pieces of steak. And it seemed like that they were also concerned about the mango relish kind of taken away from. And he, that made the dish too sweet. He chose them because of their sweetness. So this for me was just kind of the beginning of a bad episode for Damar. Yeah. You know, just like he's hopefully just having a little bit of a stutter step. He spoke about having writer's block, basically, just like kind of chef's block. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is a part of it, you know. So hopefully that's something that he's able to conquer in the next episode. We'll see.
And given that the other two people who were in the bottom with him just had incomplete dishes, like if this had been an elimination challenge, I think he would come out of it okay.
Yeah.
But it was like directionally, like what does this mean in terms of the next episode? Like was this being in the bottom twice in one episode, is that enough to shake him out of his, chef's block?
Right.
Would that be the knife block? Or that's what, I don't know if that's something similar. But, he was on the bottom along with Jay and Ashley. We'll get to Ashley shortly. But at the top, and the winner of this, we had Nick, the bread man, the baker.
The baker.
I was confused at first when they called him the baker. I didn't get the reference immediately.
And I didn't either because, Lord knows I shouldn't be expected to remember what happened last week on a show. So I can't remember all the money that he's won, but he has so much money.
He's like, at this point, he's good.
Like, yeah, he's just like, I don't even need to win the competition. Yeah, I've won all the money that the competition has to offer.
I like how he's like, there's always more room for more dough in the oven. And Evelyn and Buddha are like, I just need a slice or two, Nick. Just let me have a slice.
Just let me have a little bit of bread.
He made the tri-tip cabbage and black bean braised, jicama slaw, and lime cilantro cream with corn tortillas that I believe he made.
Made his own tortillas.
Yeah, compared to Buddha, who we'll talk about next. But
I think that's what put him over the top.
Yeah.
In all this. Although, like, these are classic. Well, the cabbage, I'm not sure if that's a classic ingredient, but the rest of these are kind of classic ingredients of Tex-Mex. I think him making his tortillas really showcased. He's always surprising us. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why, other than just our own limitations that we would put on people, we would think that he wouldn't be able to do these things. But like, whenever he busts out his own corn tortillas, for example, I'm like, that's amazing.
And underreported, I love me some jicama.
Jicama's great.
Jicama sticks from the local, sometimes you have to go to a little bit more of a specialty store to find them, but just munching on some jicama sticks is really refreshing. So
I love jicama too. And the lime cilantro cream, that sounds really good and kind of like refreshing little taste of acid, hit of acid there. Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Next, also in the top with Evelyn and Nick, we had Buddha, who made a pretty straightforward beef fajita with corn and avocado crema. They look like there are a lot of components to this. They raved about the flavorfulness of the corn. It seemed like this had a lot of components, but like I think even Claudette was asking him, did you have more time than everyone else? He didn't make his tortillas. He did buy them.
He did buy them. I very classic Tex-Mex ingredients, but he had to have just cooked them very, very well. Yeah. And then if, when you have a beef fajita, if you can make the corn the star, then that's probably some pretty good technique that you have there too. So, I'd be interested. I would love this dish because I love corn. And so anything that's going to showcase fresh corn, I'm all there for.
What's your take on street corn, some elote?
I love elote.
Yes.
It's so good.
I prefer it in the where they strip it off the cob and put it in a cup for you so you don't have to like, do the work. It's like they put it in a cup, they put in the chili powder, the cajeta cheese, the everything, and then you just eat it with a spoon. Like, you know, don't make me have to work around the cob.
Oh, no, I shouldn't have to. If I have to do any work, I'm not purchasing your elote. There's also this elote covered guacamole that I buy.
Mm.
That is very, very good.
You should check out, I don't know if you've ever been to Demo's Pizza. There's one up on Clark, kind of in Wrigleyville. There's a second location somewhere, but they have an elote pizza.
Oh, wow.
Where it's basically elote on a pizza.
Yeah.
it's got the lime crema. It's got the roasted street corn. It's got the chili powder. I'm not sure if they still, I even checked to see if Demo's is still open. I assume they are. But
it is. Yeah, I've heard of it before. I've just never been there.
Yeah, so all you Chicagoans, if you love yourself some street corn, check out the elote pizza at Demo's. Lastly, we had another incomplete dish. The salsa did not make it to Claudette's plate when Ashley served up her chicken fajitas with cheese crust, nopal, and pickled onions. I believe this the cheese crust treatment of the tortillas was something that
her
partner created and that she absolutely loved, but it seemed like it was almost like you had like scrape the cheese off of the plate or the platter or the skillet or whatever it was.
Wasn't a great outing for Ashley in this episode or this challenge. I just continue to look forward to having her around. But it's so hard to watch her be on the bottom. She said that she missed her partner and had just kind of been looking around for things that her partner would like. And then she ended up being, I think, the last one who was still shopping and just did not leave herself enough time. And it is, I think, rather easy in a challenge like this to get distracted or to let your mind wander. And this is around the time of the competition when things are really starting to get tough that you would really, really start to miss significant others and people in your family. So that all makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, at least she did not, like, she boomeranged her way back from Last Chance Kitchen. She left the main competition, came back the very next episode, and she managed to not then boomerang back in again. She has stuck her, Jackson went out before her, Jay's gone out before her.
Yeah.
There may have been another person. But she's managed to stick around. So, this got me wondering just as we were talking, it's like the ability to lose track of time when you don't have a timer in your face on the wall. It's like, my guess is they don't walk around with their cell phones.
No, they're probably not allowed to have cell phones. That's why they gave them maps.
Yeah. That was the weird thing is like, this is like how it feels like 99% of the time they're like, and the location's already programmed into your sponsored vehicle brand thing. Mm-hmm. And so I thought they were going to get into their cars and be like, yeah, you know, the location of the farmer's market's already programmed into our Lexus or whatever vehicle.
It probably was. I think that was a map of the farmer's market so that people could like go to whatever, like see a section they wanted to go to. And then because otherwise you would just look at that on a phone.
Yeah.
You would just figure that out on a phone.
But it seems like they missed out a prime sponsorship opportunity. It's like, you're going to the farmer's market. Let's jump into our programmed vehicles.
They didn't have time for another sponsorship. They already
maybe they're encouraged to wear watches and to go analog. Sponsored by Chipotle. Chipotle providing the fine proteins for this episode. So I guess even though there were vegetables strewn throughout that Chipotle display, they probably could not use any of those because they had to use their $50 to purchase vegetables around the market.
Yeah, exactly. They were only allowed to get the meat from there. That was a nice display, though.
Yeah.
I always think about the people who are in charge of putting together things like displays for Top Chef.
I was thinking days like, did Padma actually write that note, or was that like some, like an intern? And I want to go back. It'd be funny if it was the same handwriting as the welcome judges sign on the restaurant wars. Just because that would create all sorts of conspiracy theories. But I kind of want to go back to like all the times that Padma has left notes and see, does the handwriting change? Is this actually somebody at production writing these notes from Padma?
Yeah, it's definitely somebody at production writing these notes from Padma.
At the very least, Padma's like not sneaking into their living room in the middle of the night and leaving this like Santa, you know, like somebody.
I know.
So, although that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, that seems like something they would have done in season two, but not necessarily now.
So we've got Evelyn, Nick, and Buddha in the top three, Jay, Damar, and Ashley in the bottom three. Although, you know, so as we said, Jay and Ashley, you know, part of the reason they landed there was the fact that they did have incomplete dishes. But Nick ends up coming out on top here. Very impressed. And he adds more money to his baker's bank.
Yeah, the baker's got more bread.
Yeah, baker's got more bread. I was hoping because Nick, I was glad to see this because Nick is my only draft pick still left in the game. Mm-hmm. I was hoping he would win immunity, but we know that went away a couple weeks ago. Now he gets money and he ends up doing fine in the elimination. So.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Yeah, the Tex-Mex challenge in the books, and that's where they bring in Marcus Samuelson, Ethiopian born Swedish American chef, which I think is my favorite pedigree of any chef ever, any person ever.
I love Marcus Samuelson so much, just his big smile, and he's just so charismatic.
His wardrobe.
And this challenge, we got the new hotness of both Marcus and Melissa. So it's almost just too much to take.
Yes,
if I'm being honest. Like, I knew that the next challenge was coming because I'm a nerd, and I almost went to space camp.
I was going to ask you if you were like a. I was going to ask you if you were a space camp person.
Yeah, I didn't go, but I very seriously considered it. It was on the you're going to camp this summer. Which one do you choose? And the one that I ultimately chose was this leadership conference thing that I now know is run by conservative Republicans. But I did not know that when I was signing up for it as a kid. But yeah, there were like. There was this like princess from Jordan there. It was so weird. It was just like how to be a diplomat. Tucker Carlson was there. It was like looking back on it, I'm just like, oh no. Like what? They gave us free scholarships. And so I should have gone to space camp is my point.
My only summer camps were largely band camps. Drum major camp, which was Banff the precursor. Camp. Was that?
It sounded like you said Banff camp.
Banff camp. No.
Banff camp.
Band camp.
Brought to you by Mercury.
Drum major camp. And then I think there was some time in junior high where I went to, with people who know me will laugh at this, but I went to survival camp.
Oh.
Which was interesting. But anyway, yeah, I did not get the chance to go to space camp. It always had intrigued me. I remember seeing the movie Space Camp.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, Maybe that's why I wasn't interested in going, is like, I probably as a young child had a fear that, oh, something could go wrong and you could accidentally get launched into space.
That's not how that works.
Let's say the movie Space Camp, like, must have just scarred me, because that was like, yeah, the main point is, oh, this is a, you know, AI, rogue AI launches simulation in real rockets to space and kids have to deal.
That makes sense. I definitely was excited about Space Camp. I was not excited about this challenge that I knew was coming. But I wasn't excited about it because there's just something so limiting about making space food. You know, like, how many things can they actually replicate?
Well, it sounded like their current menu has like 200 food and drink items.
Yes, so, that's true. But it, I don't know.
But the idea of eating in space,
yeah,
does not seem exciting. Like, you can't suddenly decide, you know what? Let's go to a different restaurant. Like,
I know, that sounds terrible.
What you leave with, like, you've got your, what's available is the same for every day for that 6 month period. Mm-hmm. Except it gets probably progressively smaller in terms of what's available.
Yeah, that's true. And there's only so many favorites you can have. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just, if you love the crumble or whatever that dessert was, there's a limited supply of that. So, you know,
exactly.
Figure it out.
Yeah. You got to divide it equally amongst yourselves.
At least we didn't get like six versions of freeze-dried ice cream. You know,
that's true. That's true. It could have been that. People were really creative about what they did and really paying attention to the presentations that they got, taking notes and things like mm-hmm. that, which is great to see. The chefs take it seriously and, you know, like, respect it to that point. You know, they were to the point where they were citing, you know, things that they were told earlier in the episode as they presented their dishes. So that was really, that part was cool, I thought. It was just the idea of the space challenge for me, I wasn't excited about.
Yeah, they had to take into account the limitations of eating in space. And I think the big two seemed to be no crumbs, no free-flowing liquid.
Yeah.
And then they were also just as equally interested in, well, what were the kind of palate needs of the astronauts? Like, you know, Buddha asked the question to the two that were on the space station, you know, does food taste differently? And I was like, well, that's a strange question. But no, they said oftentimes, like, the first several days you're up there, you feel like you have a head cold and it's hard to actually taste anything. And so they're looking for a variety in spice and flavorfulness. They need that. Evelyn picked up on, like, looking through the menu, that there was very little Mexican food. There was very little pork. So she was looking at it almost like a gap analysis of the current menu. She was like, where are the opportunities? And she even was like, you know, there's a texture element that's missing.
The pointing out the textural element. That's what I mean kind of by, you know, hopefully they won't be limited by the fact that they're creating food for NASA, is that, you know, they obviously, that's something they have to take out of these dishes at some point when they're adapting them, if there's just no texture to any of the food.
I wonder to what extent they, like, was to what extent was this an inspirational challenge? Because it's not like the food that they were making was going to be just like picked up like a lift and shift into the NASA menu. It was like, the winning dish is going to inspire a NASA food scientist created dish. And so it's, I can see what you're saying about, it feels like your cooking can be a little bit limited, but I also, it's not like they also had to serve everything in a plastic pack, or like Ashley chose to kind of recreate the experience as much as possible using the tin and the plastic bag.
Yeah.
So it sounds like some of them were freed themselves up somewhat from, I think, the restriction that you saw. It's like they didn't necessarily have to fit it into a foil pack. So they could be a little bit more free than I think you or I had anticipated.
That's true. That's very true.
Well, I was wondering if we were going to get one of the chefs be like, oh, that free flowing liquid thing isn't that huge of a deal. I'm just going to ignore that. But no, it seemed like everybody at least tried to play by the suggestions, which was nice.
Yeah, it was really good to see.
So ultimately, the elimination challenge was they had to create a dish for astronauts following NASA guidelines of limiting freestanding liquids and crumbs. They made and served the dishes in the Top Chef kitchen, which was turned into like there was a Land Rover there and some astronaut suits. For some reason, I would have assumed that it would have been served at NASA, but maybe the commissary was closed for the day.
Yeah, it was cute that there was a rover there, though. You know, I've become increasingly excited about those meals that are actually served in the Top Chef kitchen because they look really. It just seems like a really cool place to be able to eat. You know what I mean? Just being able to see the chefs as they're preparing food. Having enough of a distance, though, where they feel like they can be honest about their opinions on the food. you know, I'm interested in spatially how that works and how big this space has to be, if that's the case. But I think that I like the cute little cozy meals that they have in the mm-hmm. Top Chef kitchen.
I think back to Restaurant Wars, where there were definitely a couple instances having the judges seated right there, like right up against the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Where they, I think the chefs could hear some of the commentary. So
yeah,
at least here it seemed like there was that enough of that distance. And also, I think when they came back from shopping at Whole Foods and they see the entire layout, and you've already got the menus laid down on the table, unless that was like a trick of the editing.
Right.
So they kind of had to, it sounds like they had to commit to what their dish was or at least how they were going to describe it.
Right.
Upon leaving Whole Foods or maybe upon entering Whole Foods, probably upon leaving Whole Foods, because we've seen a few times where people go into Whole Foods, there's not an element there that they need mm-hmm. and they have to pivot a little bit, but
yeah,
a little bit more into the production and operational side of our Top Chef kitchen here. So looking at our dishes, as I mentioned earlier, we had the same top three and same bottom three as the quickfire. Evelyn was once more in the top. She made a guiso rojo with pork, pumpkin seed rice, and escabeche. Upon a second viewing for me, just the mixing of the pumpkin into the rice mm-hmm. seemed really interesting. And again, as we said earlier, she saw pork dishes and Mexican dishes as kind of
yeah.
blind spots
right.
in the menu. So this seemed well received.
Yeah, I don't know why it wouldn't be. It sounds delicious. It looked beautiful. And it was very well thought out. I think it's, you know, again, one of the things in having, you know, the last six people on your cast be people of color is that you get to see where there are blind spots in places like this. It probably hasn't been thought about a ton in NASA, if we're thinking about, you know, what are blind spots of the menu. I will say one of my favorite things when they were doing the little tour was how everyone was like, there's no salt in space.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently not.
Yeah, so, it affects bone density, I think.
That's what she said. So
of course, this is after Luke has left. We no longer, you know, Luke could be like, yes, I can underseason.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I had to miss the episode where Luke went out.
We had our winner of the round, Buddha, only person to do kind of a dessert-y sort of dish. He play on Apollo 14. He did Pavlova 14,
mm-hmm.
The Australian dessert, a coconut mousse with berry compote and tropical salsa. See, the Pavlova is like very kind of meringue heavy, which is dehydrated egg whites. It looked like he took inspiration from, was it Alan Shepard who hit the golf ball on the moon?
That's who it was. Yeah.
And, he made these little filled balls. Evelyn called them space balls.
Space balls. Yeah.
And I was originally a little bit worried with that there might be some free-floating liquid or that the shards of the meringue might be considered crumbs, but no, they ended up loving it. And we saw more of Tom really. Tom likes playfulness. We're playful. Like on some of these unconventional challenges, I think Tom wants you to steer into the playful side.
He definitely does. I will say, steering into the playful side myself, the guy who is a former astronaut who used to steal everyone's food, if you go to about 37 minutes when Buddha and Evelyn are serving their food and presenting their dishes, he has just this like giant smile plastered on his face because he's so excited that this is what he gets to do right now. And it's the funniest thing in the world. And then right after that, you see that Tom has put on his glasses to inspect this food. He wants to see just how playful it can be. And I thought, I was just like, these two images back to back are exactly what I need in my life right now.
We saw it in the Jurassic Park challenge. We saw it here. Give Tom some well-executed fun.
Yeah.
At the right time.
Well-executed being the key words.
Yeah. And the golf balls were hit. When they were served up, part of me was like wondering, I don't know if they missed an opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
Like this could have been like a progressive meal challenge as well. Like serve a progressive space meal.
Progressive space meal.
Because then you could have ended with the dessert. You might have had a couple desserts or I don't know. It seemed weird that the dessert was served first, and that just bugged me. Like,
yeah. But. It was served in LaTanya Stark's way of eating food. I like to eat my, I think I've talked about this before. I eat my dessert first because sweet things make me hungry. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I remember you talking about eating dessert first, but I don't remember the sweet the things reason. Make you hungry element of it.
Yeah. Sweet things have always my whole life made me hungry for savory things.
Huh.
Sometimes if I can find someone who's game with me, we will order dessert first in restaurants. But yeah, this is why I always want to have leftovers because I'm going to have to eat dessert at the end of the meal, like some kind of conformist, and then I'm going to get hungry again.
Thinking back to the meal I had last night, I guess technically that's how I approach it, but we'll save that for the end of the show.
Okay.
Okay. Next up, so Evelyn Buddha were in the top. Actually, Buddha ended up winning. I guess, you know, I don't know if it's just that the food was that good or how much of the fact that he was the only dessert and he knocked it out of the park. Mm-hmm. But he ended up doing really, really well. Next up, we had Ashley and Nick. Ashley, she served marinated tuna and shrimp with a sweet potato slaw. I mentioned this earlier. She presented it in like these tins. She kind of wanted to do like a tinned fish approach. She wanted to mimic the experience of being on the space shuttle or the International Space Station. Like they even had to use like shears to cut open a bag of sauce and deploy it into the can. So
yeah. I thought that her packaging on this was in like, it was a stroke of genius. It was really cool looking and took that one woman from NASA pack. She was just like, I can't remember the last time I ate with scissors. A little terrifying.
but it seemed like the downfall here was she spent more time on the, I guess what you would consider the plating than on the actual execution of the food. I'm trying to remember if this was the dish where they could have the tuna could have been cut up smaller. Like there were a couple times this episode where it's like, yeah, this could have been smaller pieces.
I think that it wasn't cooked all the way through.
Yeah.
Was an issue. So it was like a kind of big hunk of tuna that wasn't properly cooked.
And given how much I've had like tuna, like sashimi or tuna as like part of a sushi roll, I'm like, is that really a big issue? But then I guess if you're looking at a singular piece of tuna,
right,
it's like half cooked, half raw. That's a little less appetizing.
It's got to be less sashimi. Appetizing. Yeah. Like at least with sashimi, we know how we got there. You know, that was supposed to happen.
Yeah. This is not supposed to be cooked versus this was undercooked.
Yeah.
Yes, I felt bad there. But I think if I had been a chef in this competition, I probably would have gone the same way Ashley did in terms of how can I make the plating experience seem different and unique? Like I would have tried to put the entire thing into a foil packet. It wasn't necessary.
Yeah. You've got to make sure that the food that you have, it can live up to the packaging, you know, to kind of what you're trying to create with the overall look of things.
And did Buddha's dish have dry ice? I thought there was like a fog effect.
There was a fog of, there was a bowl, I think, that was sitting on top of a saucer that had dry ice.
Okay. Making sure I wasn't going crazy.
No. Not yet.
You know, safe. We could always have a possibility. Would you consider sweet potato slaw to be a sweet precursor to a meal to help you get hungry for the rest of the meal?
No, because if it's a slaw, it probably has more acidity to it than anything else. And sweet potatoes are not inherently that sweet.
It's brown sugar or something.
Yeah,
in there,
exactly. So. Yeah.
Okay. Nick made a Mississippi gumbo with collard greens, butter beans, black peas, chicken, okra, and rice.
It's okay because yes, and here's why. First of all, I love that Nick made this Mississippi gumbo. It's something that I've eaten my whole life and just had no knowledge of what the name of it would be. It's just like, here's a stew.
In terms of not knowing it would be called gumbo or specifically Mississippi gumbo?
Okay. Not knowing that it could be considered a gumbo. And I always, you know, love how Nick is just kind of like showing up for Mississippi. He's always showing how, showcasing how Mississippi style cuisine has kind of always already been elevated to a certain point. Like we've had to make do with like very little essentially and like turn a sow's ear into a silk purse, as my grandmother would say. So I think my granny would love this and therefore I love it. And I also think she would think Nick was super cute. So
this looked really good. I love whether like gumbo, jambalaya, etouffees. Like I love kind of like some Mississippi virgin on Cajun cooking. And we didn't have any complaints or comments really about the okra. So I don't know.
I was going to say, like, you know, this is the first time that Tom ate okra and just was fine with it, you know?
Yeah.
and
fine to the point where it's like, it's, he didn't even call out like, normally, as you know, I don't like okra, but this was amazing. Right. It was like a non-issue.
Yeah, exactly. That's where you got to go. The other thing is I always forget that Nick works at the Civil Rights Museum, which is just a super cool job and a very interesting job to have as a chef. You know, like there just has to be something a little bit extra and like cool about knowing that you are there. You know, there's probably a lot of dinners that come out of the Civil Rights Museum and just like bringing people together in that way, but also in a way that is conscious. I don't know. I just really think that that's a cool job to have as a chef.
And just tons of inspiration to bring into the competition as well. Our last two were also in the bottom two, Jay and Damar. Jay served a bulgogi with gochujang barley, sesame mushrooms, and carrots. And it seemed like the barley was a new twist on kind of a traditional bulgogi dish. She was looking to get away from the kind of potentially mushy rice.
Right. Yeah, and the mushy rice is exactly what Damar suffered with.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that's interesting about Jay's dish for me is that you could tell when they show her slicing the meat just how thin it was. You know, it was paper thin in terms of how it was sliced. And then by the time it got out there, it was gray. So, you know, it didn't look like it was very appetizing to begin with, just in terms of how thin the pieces of beef were. But then the color mixed in with barley that is, you know, according to the judges, not cooked enough.
Yeah, it seemed like it was undercooked.
Yeah. It just seemed like none of the components on this dish worked for Jay the way that she wanted them to.
Yeah, I think Melissa said it was like the beef just like disintegrated the moment.
Yeah.
Like she tried to dig into it.
Yeah. And Gail was like, I left a lot of it on my plate.
I've come to discover, I think for myself, that over the past 5 years or so, that I really, like Korean food, I think is probably my favorite international cuisine. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what Jay has been cooking has been of interest to me. Like even going back to the quick fire challenge, she kind of joked about like, she doesn't know like if she, like the Korean, instead of Tex-Mex, she was doing Korea-Mex And there was a restaurant when I lived in Chicago. There was a restaurant that's now closed. Unfortunately, it's been closed for probably 6-7 years. It was called La Taqueria, and mm-hmm. It was like a taco Korea fusion place. Yeah,
that's cool. And that's a great name.
I mentioned, I think last week, there's a place nearby me here in Michigan that serves these like spicy pork burritos. My favorite thing to get there was the bulgogi burrito.
Yeah,
with ramen.
I bet.
And it was amazing. And so all of these flavors that she's playing with are really intriguing. I love bulgogi and gochujang. And so it's a shame that it just didn't execute well.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And I was a little worried when she started making the bulgogi, because the last couple of times I've had straight up bulgogi, it has been a very liquidy, saucy dish, not a thicker gravy. And so I was wondering how that was going to play out. Unfortunately, not only was Jay on the bottom, she ended up being the one who was eliminated and going off to Last Chance Kitchen. So the bulgogi did not serve her well, unfortunately.
It did not.
And then to your point, we had Damar made chicken gravy with rice and hot pickled peppers.
Damar, the peppers looked great.
Yeah. The rice, but potentially not so much.
No. And he overcooked rice twice.
Yeah.
It's really hard. This is around the time of the season where I try to read the edit. And I don't know why I do that, because I have no idea. The edit, you know, in no way tells me what I should know. But this was a major scare week for me with Damar, because he was off in both challenges.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just doesn't bode well going forward, unless we think of this as like he had an off week and maybe he was tired, you know, because fatigue becomes a factor at this point in the competition. It really does. You know, these chefs are a lot like athletes in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're playing a really high intensity game. And this is about the point where chefs start to just kind of get really tired.
Yeah.
So, a lot of like major concern for Damar, but I do think that him pointing out that he doesn't make the same mistake twice, you know, in order to have the opportunity to be back to remain in the competition, got over to the judges. And I also love when Coach Tom emerges. Because he's like, keep your heads up, and then he gives a little speech at the end about how people kind of just need to hang in there. He's trying to give them words of encouragement. We got to see a lot of different sides of Tom in this episode.
Fun Inspector Tom.
Yep. Literally inspecting fun.
And I was actually, from speaking of like reading the edit, I was thinking we got a lot of Ashley this episode in terms of, she was talking about like, you know, how she was missing her partner. And we got a lot about like some of like why it was important for her to be here and for her to not win, but also not go home. It seemed like it was like a little bit of a weird choice to reveal some of these things. But So I thought it was going to potentially be, this was Ashley's time to go. But no, we saw that it ended up being Jay, who won last week.
Yeah, I was just going to say, she went from winning to getting eliminated.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of it is, like, I don't know how much your performance in the quickfire spills over into how you perform in the elimination challenge. Like, are you still thrown off that you didn't get your entire thing plated? Did that impact both Jay and Ashley for the elimination?
So, possibly, yeah. Yeah. It all impacts your confidence.
Yeah.
And so that had to be kind of a blow to their confidence. And the fact that you get that blow and you have to immediately keep going.
Yep.
Everything about this competition is kind of like scattershot. You know, you have Padma there talking about your challenge, and then all of a sudden she's like, I hope you're ready. It's time. Bye. It's just like no warning at all. Like, it just all comes with no warning. Wild.
Yeah, it was like, okay, we're at the farmer's market. Get ready to go to NASA. I mean, there's not a lot of easy transition time in your brain.
Ashley referring to herself as the MVP of the bottom is just, it's so sad, but it's really funny at the same time.
Oh. Ultimately, yeah, Jay ends up being the one to go off to Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah.
Before we talk about LCK, anything else you have on the main episode you wanted to mention?
This is very random, and I understand that this is random, but watching Buddha at the judges' table this week, I've decided that he should wear eyeliner. And here's why.
Yeah, so I was like, is that the end of the thought and we're moving on? Or I was like, I'm hoping there's a why or an explanation attached. So continue, please, Latanya.
I think he has great eyes. And I think that a smoky eye with a strong liquid line would really just bring that out even more. I don't think you should ask me why or how this is something my brain came up with. I think you should just go with me on it and decide whom else you think should have Top Chef makeovers.
I was just impressed that last week I noticed Kwame's gold chain glove that he had on.
How did you not?
I know in previous seasons of podcast coverage, you or Haley or the great Emily Fox would call out some element of hair or clothing. I'm just now starting to like pick up on this thing, so I don't think I'm ready to comment on the need for a smoky eye just yet. I'm still catching up on clothing.
It's all right. We'll let the listeners think of that what they will. But yeah. It's just true. It's just a truism.
Yeah.
And if anyone wants to mock that up and send it to me, I am at LK Starks on Twitter.
Please, somebody do that.
Please,
so I can at least understand what smoky eye with liquid
with a strong liquid line.
Smoky eye with a strong liquid line. Well, with that, let us move on to Last Chance Kitchen makeover edition. We have Jay going up against Sarah, who I think now had at the start of this competition won five in a row, if not more.
Yeah, Sarah has just been destroying people.
Yeah,
at Last Chance Kitchen,
and this was going to. Well, I think as both you and I found out, this was a two-part Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah,
because when you go to, I think what happened was, and tell me if this is what happened for you. You go to the Bravo Last Chance Kitchen, the Last Chance Kitchen part of Top Chef Bravo, play latest episode. And you click play latest episode, and it brings up part two of this week's.
It does.
That's how I send it into it.
In its description, calling the other episode part two.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
Both of us figured out pretty early we were in the second part of something, and we had to go back and find the first part.
Almost immediately. I figured that out. To their credit, at least they had a little bit of a recap thing, kind of. or, you know, they had paused it at just the right time so that it wouldn't, you know, immediately reveal what happened in the last challenge.
Because they usually do the part where the incoming chef testant comes in. There's a little bit of a talk, like a 20 second confessional as they're packing up their knives in the, you know, back room or something. And then they come out and they see that, oh, it's still Sarah. They're surprised. All of that was kind of skipped. And it's like, oh, wait, something's wrong. So, when you go back to part one, you saw that Sarah and Jay had to compete in the Three C's challenge where they could cook anything they wanted to, but it had to contain a creamy, a chewy, and a crunchy element.
Weird.
But it goes back to Evelyn's comment about textures in space. So maybe that was like the
sure,
and or the fact that, you know, Jay's dish just kind of was dissolved into one big creamy mess. But the twist here was that they were going to cook their dishes, and then while they were out of the room, the five chefs still in the competition had to taste them, not knowing who made which dish. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm guessing they probably could have guessed, given the New Orleans influences of Jay's dish.
DeMar knew.
Yeah. And then they had to vote for which dish they preferred. And it's not that the dish that I think initially I thought, I don't know if you felt the same, that whichever dish gets the most votes, that person comes back in the competition. But that's not what they were doing. They were basically setting it up for part two. So part one, they had to make a creamy, chewy, crunchy dish. And then for the second part of the competition, they each got 30 minutes. But for every vote that they got from part one, they got an additional 3 minutes on their clock. So it was for the second part of the competition, they had 30 minutes to cook any dish they wanted to. It's just that the time they had available to do it was dependent on how they performed in part one. In part one, Sarah made a crispy delicata squash with chèvre and spicy raisin relish. So you had a crispy with the delicata squash, the chewy with the raisin relish, and the creamy with the chèvre. Jay made a shrimp boil with andouille potato emulsion, okra, kimchi, and celery pickles. Sarah got all the votes.
All of them.
That was uncomfortable to watch.
It was very uncomfortable. They should never do the challenge like this again.
I don't know if I think they shouldn't do it again, but it was uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. And then you have someone with, and the way that you're using these votes is to reward them with additional cooking time. And so you have someone who gets all the votes, and then they get 15 more minutes to cook than the other person. Who do you think is going to win the ultimate challenge?
Well, the way I thought about it was Jay had 50, they both had 45 minutes. It's just that Jay had 15 of those 45 to conceptualize.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that too.
They couldn't do it the other way because then you have Jay's dish sitting there for 15 minutes while Sarah's still cooking. But
I was surprised that she was allowed to sit there and conceptualize for 15 minutes.
I mean, other than like knocking her out with a tranquilizer, I don't think you can.
That's what I advocate for all reality shows. If not at least one person is knocked out with a tranquilizer, then I don't know why I'm watching. Do you?
Maybe that's next season.
Yeah.
So Sarah had 15 extra minutes to cook. I've been a big Sarah stan this entire time. I love her confessionals and Last Chance.
They're so funny.
Yeah, it's. And I was afraid this was going to be another boomerang where, you know, Jay leaves and goes back in again. Like in that the 15 minutes, like, was it going to be that Sarah didn't use it to critically think, and that Jay was going to be able to use the downtime to put together a plan of attack and just hit the ground running. But no, we end up with Sarah as the winner. And what may be, I think we've alluded to this previously in other episodes, is I take notes on the dishes each time. This may be the briefest description of or title for a dish this season, if not ever. Sarah made a gnocchi pomodoro. Two words. And ended up with 45 minutes, knocking it out of the park. Whereas Jay, with her 30 minutes, made a sautéed snapper with spaghetti, squash, noodle salad, and clam broth. It seemed to be some back and forth on whether or not she was undercooking or overcooking the spaghetti squash. Because I think we saw, was it Joe, I think, was talking about how she had undercooked the spaghetti squash or just to be careful with it. But Jay's like, no, I got this.
Yeah, someone did make a comment about it. And Jay was just like, leave me alone.
And
let me live.
And bearing the lead, we have Shota to help out with the second part.
Yeah, and Shota is here. Shota should always be here. Shota should never leave.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, why is he just on this random Last Chance Kitchen? Bring him and let him be a judge on an actual challenge.
I think that they said at the end of this episode, they said, pack your bags. You're going to Galveston, Texas. Yeah. And I believe Shota, I believe they acknowledged or mentioned that Shota was going to be part of the next episode.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. That's good because a lot of people don't watch Last Chance Kitchen. And so I would hate for them to miss out on the Shota of it all.
I'm looking forward to people who have only had a brief exposure to Sarah's wit from her time on the main show.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing getting more exposure. I'm loving Sarah. Looking forward to seeing some Shota. It was funny, like, as they kept cutting back and forth to the, because in the peanut gallery, watching Jay and Sarah cook, you not only have the previously evicted chefs, three or four chefs talking, you had the five contestants talking, you had sitting there, you had Shota sitting there. And there were just times where, you know, they're all like 80% of the people sitting are cheering on Jay and Sarah or giving them advice or asking them questions. And then you have like Buddha and Jackson just talking to each other. Or you had like Luke and Shota, like just randomly, just, you know, off to the side chatting. It's like, I just love that they're all making new friends.
I know. It's nice to see. I think that the episode, like next week's episode, will only be enhanced by having Sarah back. I think it's really exciting that all the chefs did have an opportunity at least to be there to see who their competition was that was coming back into the main competition. I want to try both of these dishes that ultimately they make at the end. I mean, a gnocchi pomodoro is kind of just placating to my personal taste.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. And I don't know if I've ever had spaghetti squash before.
I've only had it in, like, at the store. You can sometimes find, like, those vegetable-based noodles, like zucchini noodles or spaghetti squash noodles that are prepackaged. I've had that, I think, once. I may have had a meal kit that came with a spaghetti squash that I completely messed up. Made more of like a elbow macaroni squash out of it. I'm a big sucker for gnocchi. So that was going to be right. That would have been right up my alley.
Yeah. I would have probably chosen the gnocchi pomodoro. I want to try both of these, but who are we kidding? I love Italian food.
So we've got Sarah coming in the competition. We're still at top six. So it should be a, you know, I think we were talking last week about how we didn't think the Last Chance Kitchen was going to be for another week or two, because usually they preview it with some sort of, well, you've only got one more battle, Sarah. Yeah. Tom said nothing, so this kind of took me a little bit by surprise, but it was a pleasant surprise. So,
yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm excited.
So taking a step out of the Top Chef world and into our own lives, anything you've seen that I know that you've not been at your normal aptitude for food lately.
No.
Anything you want to talk about from what LaTanya has been eating or thinking about eating?
Yeah, so I should probably explain why that's the case. So I had surgery on my esophagus. I had to have a diverticulum removed, and then I also had to have the bottom of the esophagus opened more. And I did not know that this was going to require 6 to 8 weeks of healing. it seems like BS until you try to eat something as soft as like ramen on the first day you're back at home from the hospital. And no, so this is like an extended hospital stay, by the way. And I couldn't even eat the food. Like I just could not even get it down. So I've had a lot of soup. I've had a lot of broths. I've had a lot of Jell-O since I was last here. But yesterday I was able to graduate to soft noodles.
Yay!
I know, it's very exciting. So I got some spaghetti pomodoro, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I loved it. It completed me. it was exactly what I needed at that time. And I have leftovers, so I'm excited. But yeah, I've been eating a lot of just, you know, not great, just like liquids.
Okay. What's your go-to Jell-O flavor? Or even though, that's the common thing that's on the list. I'm not going to touch it.
No, I love Jell-O. Being in the hospital is when I normally eat the most Jell-O, though, because they just have like endless.
They have it on tap. It.
Yeah. And so I like the strawberry one. Okay. Like anything red in the Jell-O / Kool-Aid arena, I'm good with. Man, I haven't had Kool-Aid in so long.
I was actually in the like in that aisle where they have like the like I have a soda stream, so it's where they have the coffees, the teas, the additives for water, as well as I almost bought some Kool-Aid last weekend. I was like, oh yeah, this would just be a nice just
Kool-Aid's
sugar
so
water
good. And soda. It's so good. Yeah, my grandmother used to mix it with lemonade. So she'd make a batch of lemonade and then just kind of like flavor it with the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. So good. I really miss that. So yeah, I've had a lot of beverages. I'm struggling with whether or not I should like tell people this or if they'll think it's disgusting.
I think you've just confirmed that you need to tell us now.
Yeah. Okay. So when they did the surgery, after the surgery, I had to go to the ICU for 4 days because my lungs did not approve of the anesthesia. So when my surgeon came to visit me, which he did like every day, I was kind of surprised. I've never like this is the best surgical care I've ever had, I think, aftercare that I've ever had. And so the first day he comes to visit me, he's just like, you had a Beezer ball. And I was like, the hell is that?
Oh, is that, I think I know what that is.
What do you think it is?
It's like B-E-Z-O-A-R, right?
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. So I was just like, a what? And he said, you had a little ball in your esophagus that was just like fruit and vegetable fibers. And I was just like, why? No, that's something that goats have. And that, goats used to have their Beezer balls used in the Middle Ages for like healing purposes. So I was just like, what is going on? But they were like, no, this explains why you were vomiting so much. And I was like, okay, I guess. How do I not get it again? I'm terrified now.
It's Kool-Aid and Jell-O.
Yeah. So now it's just Kool-Aid and Jell-O. I've tamped down on the mango smoothies because I'm afraid that the mango smoothies are the reason that I had a Beezer ball. But yeah, it's just a really weird medical fact that I wish I didn't know about myself. But the surgeons, being nerds, were very excited to behold.
Are they going to use it for healing purposes as well?
No, well, they didn't tell me what they were going to use it for. Now I'm concerned that
this has turned into horror movie territory.
Exactly. Yeah, it was already horror movie territory.
It's a Beezer harvesting cult.
You have absolutely no idea how close I am to writing a horror movie set in a hospital. Because I've just been, it's like fertile ground for me. I've been there so often and you like get kind of like into the inner workings. And I've always decided that the department, the department that takes your blood, is run by a group of vampires.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. It just makes sense to me. So we'll see. We'll see if I write that short film.
Well, I don't have nearly as.
Do you have a Beezer ball?
No Beezer balls on this end. No space balls either. went out to a pretty uninspiring week this week as it pertains to. I guess this is kind of fun. I had a meal kit that was arriving on Tuesday, mm-hmm. and I was very excited because there were a couple Korean dishes that I had picked. I want to say it was like a bulgogi and a Korean rice cake, a pork Korean rice cake dish. And also then there was like I think I talked about this in the last episode, a everything bagel galette made with like salmon and cream cheese. And so I was excited to get this, and I was going to make the galette for my mom for brunch for Mother's Day weekend. It turns out when I selected all these dishes, I forgot to hit save. And so instead, the dishes I was delivered were at the mercy and whim of the meal subscription gods.
Oh, no.
I did get the beef bulgogi. So I think that was still there. I had a smash burger, which is fine. I like a burger. I just wouldn't have ordered it. And then I had a vegan bolognese.
How did that go?
Well, so it was with impossible meat, you know, it was the plant-based ground beef, I should say.
Yeah.
I don't think it was specifically the Impossible brand. I've enjoyed the Impossible Whopper the several times that I've had it. And the fact that I said that I've had it several times means like I had it. It's like that was actually good. And I'm going to go out of my way to get that.
Yeah, it did. I thought it was good, too. It did all kinds of terrible things to my stomach.
It's like along with the fajitas.
Yeah. the fajitas and the Impossible burger is the fajitas of fast food.
It was okay. It was like, I'm trying to think, it was onion, carrots, mushrooms. And then you had like the plant-based meat, obviously pasta. But yeah, it was okay, but it was like I was not excited to see, we didn't save you. Sorry, it's all on me. I did not correctly save the menu I wanted, and so I ended up with a vegan bolognese. But then I took my mom out to Mother's Day dinner last night. Mm-hmm. We had twice baked sweet potatoes covered in hot honey.
Wow.
Haley. So that was definitely on the sweet side.
Haley would have loved that.
And that's what made me think, we were talking earlier about dessert first. And I was wondering how you would react to the twice baked sweet potatoes with hot honey. And then for my main meal, I had this linguine that basically was like a jumbo shrimp linguine, like blistered tomatoes. And that it was quite tasty. Yeah. My mom had the this like lemon cavatappi dish. She did not realize cavatappi was basically elbow macaroni. and she did not enjoy the dish. Largely through the shape of the pasta, but she loved the sweet potatoes. And normally she'll just like sample the appetizer a little bit, and then she'll look to me to finish it off. So she finished off all the sweet potatoes, and they ended up actually like knocking the cavatappi off of our bill because my mom had not enjoyed it. It was not something we were expecting. It was like a nice bonus. But
that's nice. The blister tomatoes. You had me at blister tomatoes.
Oh.
You know, I love tomatoes a lot. I miss tomatoes. My stomach can't yet digest them properly. So even though they are soft and I could technically eat them, it wouldn't matter in like 15 minutes.
Do you know through the upcoming weeks then, as you're still kind of recovering and like at what points, like what's going to like, do you like know, like right now you just started into soft pasta.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what your next frontier is going to be in terms of like what you're going to be able to handle?
They gave me a week to week chart of the types of stuff that I could expect to be able to eat.
Okay.
They had someone like one of the nutritionists come by and bring it when I was in the hospital. It's like, you know, in retrospect, these problems are just issues because I didn't ask enough questions. So always advocate for yourself and ask questions in your healthcare people. I just did not. I thought that the surgery might be longer than it was supposed to be, and it was because of scar tissue that I have in my belly, because they went in through my belly, actually, not like down my throat, which is what I thought they'd do. But I didn't know that it would be made longer because of this random ball. but yeah, there was stuff they were like really, really good about taking me through. And then I like, you know, kind of learned from that process to ask more questions, because if you don't, then you just end up not expecting to have a GI tube for 4 to 5 days of your life. Yeah. So they I Northwestern's great. I love all my doctors. I'm just really blessed to have good health insurance. Yeah. Wish it was universal.
Well, we are glad to have you back on mic with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back. This is my first day back podcasting.
Yes.
I tried to podcast. I have I'll like talk more about this later, but I have a podcast with Bryce coming up, and that I scheduled that last Saturday with the intention of coming back on Sunday to do this podcast and do Atlanta, and it did not work. The second I got done with that podcast, I was so exhausted and in so much pain. I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to be able to do anything on Sunday. But yeah, this is my first official week back doing Top Chef and Atlanta. So I'm happy
to jump right into what people can, where people can find you, what you have going on, if you want to like transition to some plugs and endorsements.
Yeah. So you can find me always at LK Starks on Twitter, at Stormborn1222 on Instagram. Like I said, we'll be back this week for this week's episode of Atlanta over on Post Show Recaps. And I'll be a guest on the Purple Pants podcast coming up very soon. I'm not exactly sure when that's being released. Hopefully this week, I think. But yeah, Bryce and I got to talking about Heartstopper, which is the name of the actual name of the show. Heartstopper on Netflix, which I know Grace and Matt Scott are covering it more in depth. If you've been paying attention to that, you can should continue to. Or if you didn't know about that, you should definitely listen to get their perspectives. But Bryce and I both really enjoyed the show and wanted to chat about it together, so we did. So I'll be in a few things this week, really just trying to hit the ground running.
Hit the ground walking, maybe? Let's look out for LaTanya.
Let's try not to hit the ground.
Yeah.
What do you have going on, Kurt?
Oh, absolutely. Nothing.
Where can people find you?
People can find me at Kurt Clark with 2 C's on most, if not all, of your major and minor social media platforms. If I'm on it, that's probably where you can find me. I will not be on the Atlanta podcast, but I am flying to Atlanta today.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so maybe in
this
Atlanta.
Video this stupid rush hour traffic the whole day. That's
yes.
That's what I call it.
Looking forward to that. And so I most likely will not be able to, because I get back next Sunday evening, I most likely will not be able to make this podcast or watch this episode while I'm away. But that's a story for another weekend for episode 11. So thank you so much. So glad to have you back, LaTanya.
Yeah, it's so great to be back. Thank you for having me.
We got to party with while Haley was away.
Yes. And next week, we will party with you away.
Exactly.
Then we'll compare the parties.
Yeah,
and whoever had a better party will not be murdered.
Oh, good. Good. I fear for my life. On behalf of LaTanya, on behalf of an absent Haley Strong, I want to say thank you to all for listening. You may pack your knives and go. Take care. Bye.
Bye.